everything
you
want.
Morning. Morning, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. We're going to try to get this meeting rolling and get out of here early because I know everybody's got plans and would like to probably get home before the, or at least, well, the rain is before the snow falls. That's right. It's going to get cold. It was dropped amazingly overnight. I couldn't believe I had all the windows open and woke up freezing. Okay, we'll call the meeting to order and we'll have a roll call, please, Pam.
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Handy Peters.
Present.
Vice Mayor Matusik.
Here.
Commissioner Nabik.
Here.
Councilman Emter.
Here.
Commissioner Albert.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGurk is excused. Councilmember Saylor.
Here.
Commissioner Sowers.
Here.
Vice Mayor DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Vice Mayor Long.
Here.
Commissioner Revels is excused. Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's is excused. Councilmember Cusack. Councilmember Norby.
Here.
Councilmember Wagner.
Here.
Mayor Ardell is excused. Vice Mayor Rogers. Mayor Jennings, Commissioner Shoup,
here.
Commissioner Burton, Mayor Gibson, Mayor Sal, Councilmember Perrone, Linda Costello, Heather Blank,
here.
Gillis Blaze,
here.
Bob Storr,
here.
And we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Thank you very much. And if you'll please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Patterson, would you start first, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic
Thank you very much. We'll move to public comments. We have one public participant, Joe Yarborough from the South Daytona. Hey, Joe. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Won't take but a minute. I know what's on your mind, and it probably isn't everything on the agenda. First of all, hope everybody has a good holiday, good Thanksgiving. I'm here to bring you up to speed on a project that this board approved several years back. We have a bridge on Reed Canal into a subdivision called Lennon Park Bridge. The bridge is about 50 years old, was built by the county. It serves 150 homes, 400 residents, and 100 school kids that have to cross it every morning without a sidewalk. DOT says that for the last 10 years, it's deficient. For the last 2 years, it's got what's called scour deficiency, which means that it's underwashing. 2 years ago, we came before this board, the city did, I did, and asked for some help to replace this bridge. 200 yards downstream or to the east on Reed Canal, we just finished the bridge. We had a history, identical bridge of what it would cost. TPO agreed to put up $600,000. The city of South Daytona put up $200,000, which was plenty of money based on the previous construction of the previous bridge 200 yards away. Went out to bid knock in August, came in at $1.5 million. Found some subsoil problems that was not foreseeable. Can't get the foundation in. And it ran the price up. Redesigned the bridge. Did an extra effort to reach more contractors working with FDOT. We're opening the bid next month. We're still going to be short about $250,000. We need to get the bridge under contract. I'm not here today asking you to give us an additional $250,000. I'm rather here to brief you on the status of that project. The need, of course, and remind everybody of the need for that project. And at the same time, say, next month, if some funds are identified, City of South Daytona would greatly appreciate some help. We've already put in more than we anticipated, and we appreciate everything you did to recognize the importance of this bridge. But we can anticipate a problem under the best of circumstances. We're not going to bring that project in half of what it bid for in August. Okay? Bid openings next month.
And you're working with our staff here to identify if there's any additional funding. I know the TCC had some questions and they wanted to look at it. So this will be, we don't meet, well, I don't think we're going to meet next month. That's on the consent agenda.
Okay.
But staff will be here, and so you can pursue your conversations with staff. And Lois, is there anything that you want to add about the process so that the board, because we can't take an action on it today.
That's correct. There are current year funds that DOT has identified for our priority list projects, and we will be prepping an item for January to take action. This obviously came up after the agenda was set, and so I think they're just coming here to plant the seed and make sure everybody's aware of it.
And as usual, you're on top of it, Pat. Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other questions?
Good seeing you. Mr. Wagner?
Yeah, just for the members that weren't on the board at the time, this is if you have an opportunity to drive those bridges, you can see the Twin Sister Bridge, which it looks very nice. The upgrade was actually very reasonable on that bridge. But this is a safety issue. The best time to go there is about 4:30 or 5 o'clock. When you pull out, you'll almost wreck because the sun, the glare, the way the bridge is so tight, it is very dangerous. But this is one of those items when you bring up the school children, it is very bad. I know this bridge well, and it's very dangerous, so I hope we can figure out a way to do it. This was a little contentious a few years ago because of the funding and how things worked out, but luckily we worked through it. This is definitely a safety issue when it comes down to it, so definitely support it again. It's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Ford, Councilmember Ford.
As a downstream person, I urge in the structuring of the bridge to make sure that really well disposed to your bridge if you make sure it is not a constraint on Mink Canal.
And
right now the water is flowing out of the city into mine in large volumes, and I was told that there are significant restrictions along Reed Canal which are hampering.
And that is one reason it's scour rated. In other words, it's
okay,
washed
well,
it out, so that means the pylons are obstructing the flow that helps you recover, Councilmember, in Port Orange.
Okay.
The existing structure.
Thanks, Joe. Have a
okay,
good holiday.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Before we move on, I did want to introduce Gene Ferguson, who is our new liaison from FDOT. Welcome, Gene. This is your first meeting, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
That's great. So good, we welcome you and hope you have a long and prosperous career here.
I do too. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning.
Okay. All right, we're losing a few members of the TPO Governing Board, including me, so we want to take a few minutes to recognize them for their service, and we'll start with Gene Empster. We want to acknowledge Gene, who is council member for the City of Edgewater. Gene, how long have you been serving here?
Just about 3 years.
About 3 years, okay. And is there anything you would like to tell us what your future plans are? Or you're not going home to retire, I know that.
Well, people ask me, what are you going to do, and my response currently is as little as possible.
There you go.
Or at the same time, as much as Bob Gilliland does, Rob Gilliland. So,
I've been following him around. And
I've seen that. I keep trying to invite you.
Well,
but I would say, as far as, the TPO is concerned, you guys do a lot of good and have done a lot of good in the past, and truly hope that everything goes well in the future with the combination of FDOT and the interest of both the communities and the county working together. To me, that's one of the most important elements there are. Good things can happen.
Well, I'm going to challenge you when that pedestrian overpass is completed. I think next month, it should be next month.
Right.
We need to ride bikes over it.
Ah.
Okay, right off to the sunset? No, well, that's not going to happen.
I'm not sure about getting up the one side. I guarantee
you can get down. Okay. All right, well, we have a certificate. If you want to come around here, we'll present you with a certificate. This is a certificate of recognition. The certificate of recognition and appreciation is presented to Gene Empster for your outstanding dedication and service to the River to Sea TPO Board and the Central Florida MPO Alliance 2012 to 2014.
Thank you.
And I don't see Cameron. Is Cameron Lane? He's not here, is he? Okay. Well, we'll make sure that we get this to him.
Madam Chair, can I be recognized for a moment?
I suppose. Don't do it, right?
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
We all know that our chairperson here, Ms. Northey, is going to be leaving us. And the staff gave me a cheat sheet because she'd been around here so darn long, you have to have something to read to be able to know everything she's done.
You've been around as long as I have, buddy.
Well, we came in, I left, ran away for a few years. But she joined the board in 2007. She served on the executive committee, the bylaws subcommittee, the budget subcommittee, the legislative issues subcommittee, reapportionment subcommittee, the Central Florida MPO Alliance, and the MPO Advisory Council, which means she's just about pissed off everybody in the state of Florida.
apparently, Volusia County.
She's well known, you know, her for her advocacy on the trails and everything. And so, Pat, we're going to miss you, and the transportation people are going to miss you. And we have a certificate of recognition for your outstanding dedication to all the things that I just read here a minute ago. So I'd like to give you this.
Thank you.
I don't know how I managed to sign it. I'm kidding. But I told Lois I wanted to bring a Chippendale dancer in, but she said it wasn't in the budget.
Lois!
So
that would have livened it up a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how the feds would have
but we,
processed
we know you're
that
gonna
invoice.
Need some things
oh,
as you ride
this.
The trails.
Oh, look at this.
And,
this is great.
Happy trails to you,
happy
dear.
Happy trails. Thank you, sweetie.
First time I met this lady was in 1992, and she was running for the first time. I was running for the first time at-large seat, and that's when I learned that this county is 200 square miles bigger than the state of Rhode Island. It was a hell of a job running a campaign countywide, but she came wandering in, and Roy Schleicher and I were having lunch. And you were invited in there, and she came walking in. She had an appointment with an opponent, I'm sorry. From the Barry, and went on, and here it is. What
rest is history? Yeah.
That rest is history. Yeah.
So, can we challenge him to ride that bicycle with us too?
There we are.
There we go.
You know, my bike has been sitting in the porch. I had a friend that sold me. He had a fancy bike. Oh yeah. Originally it was $800, but I didn't pay that much for it. But it's been just sitting there. I went out there Sunday, and both tires are flat, so I've got to get it pumped up and get me pumped up again, so looking forward to it.
Well, we'll make sure we get you out there on those trails, which I hope that I'm going to put my plug in here. Mr. Wagner, please listen to this. That the trails program, which is significantly done, but we're doing the missing links. We're looking at that. I hope that that continues, that that project continues to identifying the missing links around the loop between Volusia and Flagler, and also that coast-to-coast connector project is critically important to Volusia County. We are ground zero in that, and the funding is mostly in place. There's a few dollars that we have to identify for the trailheads. I think those are the ones that are missing, but other than that, they're good to go. So it's an important project, not just because I like it, but because it's really critical for the county. So thank you very much, and it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with you all. I will miss you, but I'm not going home to a rocking chair to retire, so I'll be around. Okay, consent agenda. I'll take a motion to approve the consent agenda, and please note that in that consent agenda is a satisfactory performance evaluation of the executive director, as well as the recommendation by the executive committee for the TPO to renegotiate the employment agreement, which expires in March 2015. Mr. Patterson, that'll be your responsibility. It also includes cancellation of the December meeting, as we never meet in December. Our meetings are always canceled in December, so you all can have a happy holiday and a Merry Christmas. So moved by Jean, seconded by Marshall for the consent agenda approval. Okay, any other questions?
Just
Mr. Wagner?
A statement. I'd just like to put on the record how great of a job Lois has been doing. She's been excellent. I could not be happier with the director. Her professionalism, the way she's addressed the issues, the way she's kept us up to speed. I don't think you could ask for a better director for this organization. I just want to continue to let her know that she's been great.
Okay, we'll put that into the record. Okay, any other Okay, seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We'll move to our action items. First item up, review and approval of Resolution 2014-38, reaffirming the policy for establishing and maintaining transportation projects. And Lois, I'm going to let you talk a little bit about this one, please. What's changed here?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Both action item A and B pertain to our annual call for projects and the development of priorities that we use to communicate to the DOT so that they can build the five-year work program. Action item A is a resolution that establishes that policy overall for developing the project priorities. And we typically review this each year, and we go ahead and make modifications that we need to and make sure that the program still reflects exactly what it is that we want. So significant changes that you see in this resolution this year include that changing the nature of the bridge list. It had been limited to bascule bridges, and the group wanted to go ahead and expand that to major bridges. We're adding a new project list, and this was discussed previously, and it was as a recommendation from DOT, and it is a planning studies list. Again, we talked about that a little bit at our prior meeting. We deleted a portion of item 10, which had to do with changing the priorities and not changing the priorities each year, and that was inserted last year as we moved through reapportionment so that we could be flexible as we introduce new sections to the planning area boundaries. So that's no longer relevant, so we're getting rid of that section. And then finally, and this is kind of the item to focus on, and it has to do with removing projects that are in that protected tier. As your project moves along and you get into this top tier, at that point it's protected, and we don't re-rank it each year, so that you, a local government can begin work. They want to begin design work, they can work it into their project schedule, they know it's very close to being funded. And we've had a couple of projects that have moved into that section and then just stayed there and stayed there and stayed there, in part because the local government didn't see that due to changes. They no longer saw that as a priority for them, but sometimes it's hard to let go. So the committee discussed this at length and came up with a policy to remove those projects after five years, if there was inactivity on the part of the program sponsor. So it's not if there's not funding available, but if you keep bypassing, and passing your turn, that at some point we have to recognize, and 5 years was the time frame. But the TCC had recommended slightly different language than what was in the draft proposal that's in your package. And the language that they recommended softened it a bit, and I just want to read that. And this is from page 29 in your agenda packet. And it's, if the project has not been programmed during that time, that five-year period, due to a fault of the sponsor, and failing an acceptable explanation to the TIP subcommittee, the project will be removed. So they just went the extra mile and recommended that we take some time to speak with the project sponsor before it is automatic, which is reasonable. So those are the comments that I have with regards to the resolution. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Lee?
I'm not sure the word fault is appropriate either. I mean, that sounds like they may not want to do it or whatever. And I think the word that you used in making the presentation was inactivity. That might be a little bit better, I think, than fault.
Inactivity on the part of the project sponsor.
Yeah. Because it may be something totally out of their realm to be able to do, but I wouldn't say it's a fault per se.
Yeah, generally, just again, as a point of note, we have been very successful over the last several years at almost exhausting the lists that we have submitted. So for a project to sit in that protected status for 5 years is very unusual. And again, it either signals that there is an obstacle that they've not been able to overcome, or it simply isn't a priority. So again, this doesn't happen very often, but changing from fault to inactivity.
Lois, I have a question about the 5-year window. That sounds to, I know it's been forever before, but what was it about 5 years as opposed to maybe a shorter time frame in light of, you know, there's a lot of projects that now come out, and now that the economy's turning around, people are wanting to move some projects forward. So why 5 years and not something like 3?
Well, usually when we do feasibility studies, the forecast for feasibility studies is 3 years out. And sometimes if there's an issue trying to get approval from a homeowners association or something, it can certainly hold up a project beyond that 3-year period. I don't know, Bob, if you have any additional light to shed on how we landed on 5 years, except to say that that was just a reasonable time frame.
Yeah, I think that was the committee, as I understood it, did not want to be difficult in this regard, so they chose 5 years without a lot of discussion. It was thought to be rather generous.
5 years. Yeah, it that is rather generous, and that's why I just wondered if we were making changes. You know, it seemed to me with a 3-year window and then a review at 3 years would have made more sense. But Rob Gillian, please.
So, Lois, the motion that's on the floor is actually for what's in our packet, not the TCC language.
There is no motion yet.
There's not a motion on the floor yet?
No.
Because I don't like this addition that the TCC is recommending where, you know, without, with the exception of a reasonable excuse, whatever that was, it's going to put this board in the position of determining reasonableness. And I think it simply should be, if it's inactive for 5 years, it comes off the list. I mean, that is not an unreasonable position to take.
I agree.
And I'm fine with Lee's position about fault being a little harsh, but I don't like this addition of the TCC is recommended.
That was not part of the resolution, though, is it, Lois?
It's not part of the resolution. Right. That's recommended changes from the TCC only.
Right. Okay, thank you. And then can I ask a question about changing bascule bridge list to major? And that's, y'all have done the but how do we define major? Bascule is a definition. You know what a bascule bridge is. What is a major bridge? I'm concerned about that one. Although I think we have to address bridges.
Well, certainly, when we would talk about major bridges, those would need to be projects in the long-range plan, identified in the long-range plan. I don't think the committee has defined major.
No. That's correct.
Okay. All right. I won't be around here, so. Mr. Patterson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to, on number 13, after the word within 5 years, or after the word within, just amend that to 3 years instead of 5.
Okay, you want to make that, well, we have to put a motion on the floor for the approval, and then we can amend that.
So
it's moved by Mr. Saylor, Councilmember Saylor, seconded by?
Second.
Okay, by Commissioner Nobick from Deltona. Okay, now, you want to make a motion to amend?
Yeah, I'd like to amend that after the word within, from 5 years to within 3 years.
Okay, is there a second? And there's a second to that motion. So we'll vote on, is there any discussion on the amendment? Lee?
I understand the county and some of the, you know, bigger cities might, you know, be able to move things a little bit faster than the cities can, especially with the budgets. And I just think 5 years gives everybody that same opportunity. And 5 isn't reasonable. I mean, our work plan is 5 years, too. I mean, everything we work on is 5 years.
To be clear, that is based on once it moves into protected status, not when it's originally applied for. And then there's also the opportunity to turn right back around and apply. So again, it wasn't intended to be, gee, we're just going to, you know, once that 3-year or 5-year mark hits, we're yanking the project. There's the opportunity to come back and go ahead and reapply. But at that point, we're looking for a formal recognition that you that a project sponsor still intends and is trying to move this project along. And again, this came up because we have a couple of projects on lists that really the project sponsor doesn't intend to move along. And we hoped that they would be withdrawn, but they haven't been.
We'll take a vote on the motion. On the amendment to the motion. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
All right, we need to do a roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Commissioner Navit?
Yes.
Councilman Hunter?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert?
No.
Councilmember Saylor?
No.
Apologies, Madam Chair. It turns out that there's an older version prior to the reapportionment when we went to a single alliance.
Oh.
So Pam is just going to get the current sheet that shows the small city alliance versus the three small groups.
Oh, okay.
She'll re-record those in just a moment.
Okay. We'll just sit quietly and twiddle our thumbs. We're not in public participation.
I know. I just want to say, out of order, that
you are out of order.
If Lois ever lets Herb go on vacation again on a meeting day, it shows in what's going on around here. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Commissioner Gilliland?
Yes.
Councilmember Handy Peters? Vice Mayor Matusik?
No.
Commissioner Navit?
Yes.
Councilman Emter?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert?
No.
Councilmember Saylor?
No.
Commissioner Stowers?
Yes.
Vice Mayor DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
No.
Vice Mayor Long?
No.
Commissioner Shoup?
I don't believe I'm supposed to be rotating.
You're the next in line.
I'm the next in line. Yes. Okay.
Councilmember Patterson?
Yes.
Councilmember Wagner?
No.
Councilmember Northey?
Yes.
Councilmember Cusack?
No.
Should have asked.
The motion carries 59% to 29%.
Okay, the amendment carries, and now back to the original original motion. Is there a discussion on the original motion?
I just have a question on the numbers 59 to 29.
Because we use a weighted vote, if you're not here, your weight simply doesn't affect.
Okay.
And so between yes, no's, and absence, it adds up to 100%.
Can you tell my scale that?
We can go back.
Okay, seeing no additional comment on the motion, all those in favor of the motion, the original.
Lee, you wanted to make a change to fault?
Yeah, fault to inactive.
Can we just do that by acclamation? Just make that change?
Whoever made the original motion.
Concerned about that, yeah. Who made the original motion?
Pass.
Gene, did you make the original motion? Did your motion include changing that
yes.
word? Thank you. And the second was?
I second.
Was Chris, okay, and you're okay with that. Okay, all right. Okay, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries with the amendment. Okay. We'll move to, excuse me, review and approval of the priority process project application. That's a tongue twister. Okay. Lois, you want to walk us through what we're doing on this one?
Yes, Madam Chair. Again, these are the actual applications that local project sponsors fill out for these various sort of smaller set-aside programs that we have. And just to give some of you a history, years back, the XU or SU set-aside that comes to a TPO that is the size that we are, and it's roughly $5 million a year, $4.5 million a year, it's at the discretion of this organization to determine how to spend those funds. And most MPOs and this MPO at the time would spend those to develop road projects. And again, many, many years ago, this body made a very progressive change that a lot of MPOs have since followed. But I would say we were certainly at the lead of that. To take that money and set it aside for transit, for bicycle and pedestrian projects, and for ITS and traffic operations and safety projects. Again, when you're doing a major road project, $4.5 or $5 million doesn't go very far. But in those other categories, that money goes very far. And there weren't a lot of other funding sources available for those particular types of projects. So again, this TPO made a decision to go ahead and express its policy decisions in funding alternative modes rather than just roads. And that served the area for a long time. But there are some changes underway where there is more of a desire to spend other types of funds on these projects as well. And more funding is becoming available for bicycle and pedestrian projects and ITS and safety projects. And so one of the big changes that we have proposed this year is to sort of change it really is a small change in terms of the projects themselves, but a big change in terms of funding availability, and that is no longer restricting them to SU or XU set-aside money or transportation alternative money. So what you see in the package is what we've called we've uncoupled it. And so we've opened it up to projects that may get funding from any source. SU is still going to be applied to those in accordance with the policy that's been set. But if there are other state funds that are available, then we want those to go to these projects as well. So this better reflects our priorities, not just for a funding source, but our priorities for the planning area overall. So again, what you see in the applications is an uncoupling of those projects from their fund source. And in this particular instance also, when it comes to the ITS and traffic ops project application, the recommendation from the TCC and CAC is to not have a cap on the project funding for projects submitted under that program. And there was a lot of discussion about that in particular because we've talked about this each year. Those are intended to be smaller projects, not major capital infrastructure projects which are required to be identified in the long-range plan, and those projects typically are found on a different list, on our non-CIS other roadway list. These are smaller projects. They're typically locally managed and not intended to be expensive or lengthy in duration. But the TCC felt like there was a gap in between the set-aside, which had been capped at $3 million, and the non-CIS other list, which requires a project to be listed in the long-range plan. Now, we haven't had any projects that have been held back because of this. And if you recall last year when there was a discussion about roundabouts, which far exceeded the cap for this particular list, the board recognized that those projects, in order to continue moving forward, needed to rest someplace, and the board agreed to go ahead and put those on this list. The project applications do allow for waivers on the cap. So again, the recommendation from the TCC, and Heather may have more to share about that as the TCC rep, but their recommendation was to lift the cap completely. Now, I would share with you that I have a little bit of a concern, because with no cap on dollar amounts, I'm not sure what kind of applications we may get this year. But just like the last action item that we took, the reality is we can make a change. We will be coming back and visiting this again next year. So if something happens that was an unintended consequence, we can always correct it. Okay. So that being said, the item in your agenda packet includes a project cap. One of the recommendations from the TCC was to do away with the project cap. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have about that.
Heather, did you want to add anything from the TCC?
No, I think you captured that very well. I think that the idea was that since there will be an uncoupling effect, the limitation would perhaps inhibit some of the projects that could actually be considered beyond the actual cap that's currently set. So the uncoupling effect would be, the benefit is, would not be received, actually, in fact, if you maintain a cap.
Okay. Madam Chair, I make a motion to approve without the cap.
Motion to approve without the cap. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Patterson. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries with the uncoupling. Okay, we'll move to item C, review and approval of resolution 2014-39 amending the fiscal year 2014-15 through 2018-19 transportation improvement program, the TIP. And I will ask you to walk us through this.
This is a fairly straightforward amendment that has been requested by the Department of Transportation. In the first item is signal improvements and ITS improvements on US 92, and the original project extended to Nova Road, and DOT is asking to extend that farther to Beach Street. And the reason for that are that the current signals are tied in all the way to Beach Street. So that's currently how they're tied together, and they want to be consistent with the way that project is currently outlined as they do upgrades. And then the original project estimate was low. So the increase you see here is not the result of that additional expansion, but rather for the entire project from Tomoka Farms all the way to Beach Street, there were some additional costs that were identified. So again, they're looking for an increase for the limits and for the project cost. And then the Dunlawton Avenue pedestrian walk lights, just before the DOT sort of freezes their program, they call it lockdown, they go through and they review projects that are in the very next year. And if those projects haven't progressed in a way that makes DOT feel comfortable, they try to remove some of those projects, again, to make sure that they don't get caught in a difficult spot, because there's a lot of pressure to keep projects on schedule. And the design plans hadn't been ready for that project, so they asked that it be removed if in the interim between now and the end of this fiscal year and the start of the next fiscal year, those design plans move forward, then that project can be reintroduced.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the
motion, approved.
Motion by Rob Gillian, by Commissioner Gillian, seconded by
second.
Was that Ms. Matusik? Okay, from DeLand. Questions? Comment? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. That concludes the action items. We'll move now to presentation items. And, well, Frank, you're just Johnny on the spot. Update on Strategic Intermodal System SIS projects. And I know this is going to be exciting and interesting, isn't it?
This will be exciting and interesting and hopefully short, timely.
Hopefully.
My name is Frank O'Day. I'm the Director of Transportation Development for the Florida Department of Transportation, District 5. For those of you who don't know what the SIS is, Strategic Intermodal System, and those are the major transportation facilities. All of our interstates and a lot of our U.S. highways and State Road 40 in this area, U.S. 92, all those are SIS facilities. So I was asked to give an update. We have a lot of stuff going on in Volusia County right now and Flagler counties, and just to let you know that there's basically under contract about $500 million worth of work on the SIS in Volusia County. So I'm going to give you a quick update of where we are with all that. As well,
is
I've been asked...
$500 million? Is that what you said?
$500 million, yes. And,
that deserves a tweet.
Deserves a tweet. In addition, we were here a few months ago to talk about the I-4 managed lane project, so I'm coming back to kind of reframe that and get confirmation on where we want to go on that future project. So also, I will give you guys an update if you don't know. There's a few projects under construction. It gets a little confusing, so I'm going to try and do this in a manner that makes sense to me, and I'm hoping it makes sense to you. We have four projects under construction, and a quick update on an upcoming project in Flagler County, and then the I-4 managed lane project. Currently under construction, I-4 from State Road 44 to I-95. For those of you who don't know, we did have a little incident last night with a pothole opening up westbound. I would suggest that if you go home today, that way, take U.S. 92.
Is that what the traffic jam was on
I-4
going
west?
That's
exactly what it was. We have people out there right now. They've already made one repair, but another opened up. So hopefully by about 10:30 or so, it'll be complete. But I would suggest.
Was it right there where the construction kind of dips down? Because I hit that last night going home, and it almost went off the road, Frank. So.
Well, that's exactly what it was.
Okay.
And so they're out there right now fixing it.
Yeah, I was.
Be aware, we do have folks here from our construction office if there's any particular questions, and send your bill to them. That project, it's a 12-mile project, a little over 12 miles. It costs about $134 million. Right now, we're doing concrete paving. We're getting ready to switch traffic over after the first of the year to the other side so we can rebuild the lanes heading eastbound. A couple things about that project as well that... you might not be aware that when we are building the westbound lanes, we're making the shoulder extra wide between the flyover and State Road 44. And the reason for that is it'll allow for potential hurricane evacuation, so we'll have a fourth lane, as well as for race events. After the races, we'll have the ability, if we need to have four lanes heading out of Daytona. So that's kind of a side benefit from that project as well. The project is going to be complete by May of 2016. So that's project number one. There's some pictures showing the also adding three animal crossings along I-4. There's protected lands on both sides, so that's what those raises are. If you ever come across, we're providing bridges for the animals to get across. And there's some pictures of the concrete paving going on right now. We are rebuilding it with concrete. That will be there about 100 years from now. That is a long investment. So, again, expected completion for that project is May of 2016. The next project I wanted to bring you up to date on is I-95. It starts in Brevard County in Titusville, and it comes all the way into Volusia County up to State Road 44. That project is just under 30 miles. That's a $118 million project. There's a lot of work going on right now. We expect that the widening from Titusville up to the Brevard-Volusia County line is going to be complete early 2016. And then the remaining portion in Volusia County up to State Road 44 is going to be complete by the spring of 2016. Now, that's a project that we were able to advance. Initially, it was supposed to go from Titusville. Basically, it was going to end within Brevard County. But we had a little bit of extra funding, and we challenged the contractors. We basically put a competition out there, and we made one of the selection criteria, see how far you could go. We anticipated that we would get the widening up to State Road 442 up in Edgewater, and we were really amazed that we were able to get it all the way up to State Road 44 for the same amount of money. So that was a really good advantage. And so what that did is it left a really small hole from State Road 44 up to US 92 in Volusia County, with the only stretch of I-95 that wasn't six lane. And our Secretary of Transportation did not like that. So he helped us find the money to do that, the next project, which is project number three. In addition, it includes a total reconstruction of the I-95, I-4, US 92 interchange. And a lot of you are familiar, there's a lot of weaving and traffic movements there. That project is a $205 million project. It's about 14 miles overall. It originally wasn't supposed to happen for another 10 years, but because, again, of the idea that we wanted to complete the widening of I-95, we were able to advance it. Currently, design is underway, and we have an extra handout because there was some interest in what the movements, you know, the improvements we're going to make at the interchange. So we did provide that as a handout for you as well. The idea basically is if you're running up I-95, there's a lot of activity, and we want to be able to remove the oncoming and off departing traffic from the main line. So if you're traveling on I-95 through, you'll be able to maintain your speed safely. If you're going to get off at anywhere, you'll divert. There'll be a series of collector-distributor roads. You'll do your movements, and then you'll be put back on the main line of I-95. It's a much safer condition, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of money. Also, coordinating with the, of course, the Daytona Speedway is undergoing its expansion, and so we've been coordinating our maintenance of traffic with them as well. Design is underway. Construction for that will begin in 2015. Again, we've been working with the Daytona folks on maintenance of traffic phasings, and we expect that project to be complete overall by late 2017. So the last project under construction I was going to give you an update on is the US 92 pedestrian safety improvements, and that's from Williamson all the way to Midway. The project itself is under construction right now. It's broken down into three phases, 1, 2, and 3, and for each phase they have to do some demucking. We're filling in the ditches to basically provide a lot wider sidewalk for all the folks that are going to be in that area.
Are you doing 12 or 15 along there?
I'm sorry?
Sidewalk, 12 or 15 foot.
How wide is the sidewalk, Brad?
It's 12 foot. 12 feet, okay.
Right. In a lot of areas, though, it ties right into private property, so it kind of is an expanse. It doesn't necessarily end, but our limits are 12 feet for our width. And that project is scheduled for completion late 2015. And again, the timing of that is scheduled to work with the opening of the speedway. So that's the update on the active construction projects. Before I leave that, I offer, if you will, Chairwoman, any questions from?
Ms. Matusik?
On looking at, and I know we've had a lot of conversation and the alternatives analysis is being worked on. I am assuming, which has been a long conversation for this board, that there is some sort of a placeholder through the 95-I-4 interchange, even with this redesign, for a possible rail connection.
Yes, we have verified that numerous times that we've talked about it. And we have it at both locations, both at State Road 400 as well as at US 92, knowing that there's no defined location. A rail envelope is preserved at both locations.
Okay, thank you.
Rob?
Frank, at one of these meetings previously, they reported that the DOT was looking at five different locations for that rail crossing. Are you telling me now that we're down to two?
No, I'm not. We have an alternatives analysis going on. We know that it'll cross at least at those two locations, so I can't really address the alternatives.
Well, one of the two, right. It'll cross at one of the two, not both.
Yes, it wouldn't cross at both.
Yeah, okay. So let's see. My understanding that the DOT took the gas station there on 400 that's on the on the east side for the new on-ramp. Is that correct?
Yeah, the 7-Eleven that was there?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
When do you get to take that down?
I can find out.
We got a lot of homeless people in there and a lot of graffiti and things. It's fenced off, but, you know, it's a fairly isolated property, but if you're going to take it down at some point soon,
I think we can arrange for that to happen.
And lastly, have you gotten as far as looking at the how this will be landscaped?
That was actually one of my notes that I forgot to mention. But, yeah, we do have landscaping money. For that last project, we've identified $3 million that we're going to concentrate mostly on the interchange, but there's actually an interchange down at State Road 44. We've been talking with the city of New Smyrna, and then, of course, the interchange at Dunlop. So we do have money identified in fiscal year 2019. The idea is that we'll complete the project, and then we'll do the landscaping, especially at this crossroads of I-95 and I-4. We really expect that the landscaping, as well as potentially working with the city on fountains in the ponds, lighting, things like that. So that is in the budget.
Frank, are you going to use natives for that land? I mean, is that now the policy of FDOT to use native or low water?
We use low water, low maintenance.
Low maintenance.
Yeah,
okay.
a lot of bigger trees are the tendency has been to use bigger trees. They're all palms, a lot of palms, but native species as well. But and again, I've been talking with the city manager of Daytona, and of course we're going to involve them on that massive interchange.
And Frank, you mentioned a number earlier for the landscaping at those three locations. What was that total again?
We're preserving $3 million.
$3 million. Okay, great. Thank
That's
you.
That's pretty good number for landscaping. Okay, and I, Frank, I just want to say, as the outgoing chair, it's FDOT has been really good to Volusia County. You've worked well with all of us, and please express to Norianne my gratitude, particularly on projects that have been near and dear to my heart. Like you find money to put on road projects, you've been very good about finding money to put on trail projects as well. So, thank you.
I'll pass that on. I do have a few more, just real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I interrupted for the questions. But the next, we're talking about upcoming projects, I-95 up in Flagler County, Matanzas Wood Parkway. That's a project Flagler County has been working on, and we've been helping them with funding. Construction's going to start. It's an existing overpass. We'll add the interchange ramps, and that'll be complete in 2016. Last but not least, I-4 managed lanes. And that's a project we've talked to you about before. Segment 4 is basically the Volusia County portion. We're starting construction early 2015 in Orlando area, adding our managed toll lanes, two lanes each direction. Eventually, we will work our way up to Volusia County. A couple of highlights from that project that a lot of you know about, but I figured I'd do one last reminder. At Dirksen, these are some of the side benefits or side things that are happening as a result of this. At Dirksen, it looks like we're looking at a new direct ramp from eastbound I-4 to eastbound Dirksen. That will require us to move that park and ride lot, but we know it's important, so we're looking at relocating that to the west side of the interchange. We know that there's a trail crossing there. I go through it every week, and we've preserved that as well. I don't know if I should mention that I slipped on the trail and I hurt my wrist this week. So watch out for those stripes. They're slippery. But so I
are you taking the apartment complex there for that park and ride?
That hasn't been determined yet. It's premature.
That would be a good thing. Much like that 7-Eleven, that would be a good thing.
Checking into that. We did look at the cost of that. They're rather expensive. Up at Saxon, we understand that there's already a backup there now. The only way we can get that interchange to work is to widen Saxon to six lanes, at least to Normandy. So as a part of this project, we anticipate that will happen. I know the city would probably like us to be able to begin that earlier if we could. Let's get this part done and see what options we have available to us.
And we can talk about going all the way to Tivoli.
Third item that I want to mention was the idea of the Rhode Island extension. This has been a long sought after idea for Volusia County. We think that with our I-4 expansion project, this makes perfect sense. It would allow us a direct connect from this local network to our express lanes, and it would also then provide that added connectivity from Orange City to Deltona. So that would be incorporated as part of this project. As also, we're looking at a park and ride lot over there as well, so that would be a nice feature for the folks from Deltona or Orange City who want to get right onto the express lanes.
Yeah.
And then at 472, it looks like the preferred alternative is a diverging diamond interchange. It's a little unusual if you haven't seen one before. It eliminates a lot of the left turns, which is where a lot of conflicts are, so it's flow smoother. To get there, you have to drive on the wrong side of the road, which people have a little aversion to. There's a number of those in place. They actually work really well when you're on the road. They just look a little confusing from the air. So a couple of the things that we had talked to you about was the idea that Volusia County Council basically had asked us to consider a transit corridor. We mentioned it earlier that the transit envelope exists in the median of I-4 from 472 into Daytona, and we are asked to preserve that corridor as well from Seminole County into 472. So we provided two alternatives. One is without a rail corridor, and then we expanded it with the rail corridor. But we do need confirmation that that's the desire of the TPO to preserve that corridor. And I'll go through some costs here in a minute. Another question was where we want to finish those express lanes. Right now, the vision is we'll have two express lanes each direction, and we could carry two lanes through Dirksen and drop it to one lane and then carry that one lane each direction up to Rhode Island. Or the other alternative is just to carry those two extra lanes all the way to Rhode Island. There's a little bit of extra cost, but again, the department prefers that alternative as well. So what that leaves us with is a engineer loves a matrix, and what my matrix is trying to show you is that the department's preferred recommendations are to carry the transit envelope and to carry the two managed lanes all the way to the extent of the managed lanes at Rhode Island. It would have a little bit of an impact on right-of-way. We would take impact a few more businesses. It would cost a little bit more, but we do believe that that's the right thing to do. And again, are looking for confirmation from this board that that is your desire.
Are you looking for that today?
Yes, we are.
Okay. We hadn't had that on the agenda, so I'm kind of surprised. Lois, do you want to make some remarks? Do you want to talk about this?
Well, I wanted to talk about ask a question about a different part of the presentation. But to this respect, if you would like to give an indication, we will bring a resolution back at the January meeting.
Okay. And you're looking for particularly on the two lanes for Rhode Island up to Rhode Island.
And as well the confirmation on the rail envelope.
Preserving the rail envelope from Seminole.
From Seminole to force through the project.
Okay. Right. Is there a motion to...
Pat, I've got some questions before we get to the motion.
Okay, Ms. Matusik.
If you don't mind. In a lot of these presentations... It was my understanding that the managed use lanes weren't necessarily going to be needed and come into Volusia County.
If
I thought it was discussed with all of the widening there that the managed lanes after it got to Seminole. Then there was another study bringing it in. Or are you saying that it is done all the way into Volusia?
Well, what we're currently going through is the PD&E, Project Development Environment, that's looking at expanding those managed lanes into Volusia to 472. So that's part of the process that we're in now. The results of that PD&E are that managed lanes would be warranted through 472. Now, we do not, from 472 into Daytona, what we're building today is what we anticipate is going to be there for the next, 50 years or whatever. I mean, we don't anticipate expanding them past State Road 472, but definitely into Volusia County when congestion warrants. And it's not today, but this is the future.
Okay, so this is not part of the major I-4 widening project in Orange and Seminole.
That's underway this year. This is not funded for we've got preliminary design funded, but we don't have right of way or construction funded on any of this. So this is the horizon for this is in the 2020s sometime.
Yeah, they're changing slip lanes.
I just wanted to make that clear that this isn't part of everything that's going on now at this point.
I'm sorry. Yes.
So, okay.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion to give direction to staff to bring back a Gene.
Just a quick question, if I may.
Sure.
In regard to the preservation of the rail line in the center. I think I've this question has come up before. Is there a continuation? You're talking about the center section being open from Volusia County to DeLand, but from Seminole back, if I'm not mistaken, there is no center.
Well, that's what they. That's what we're part of this motion would include is to keep a rail envelope from Seminole, from Sanford. I believe is where that study, the alternative analysis, begins in Sanford. So that's what we're looking for, correct, Frank?
Right. Well, there is no, once you get into Seminole County, there is no envelope leaving Orange County into Seminole County, and there's no long-term plan. We are currently in the alternatives analysis that is going to go all the way down to State Road 46,
to 46
and look at
right.
potential ideas. But
yeah.
Beyond the northern limits of Seminole County, there is no plan in Seminole County for a preservation of a rail envelope.
Into Orlando. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think that's
well, then my question is, then what potential use would there be for this envelope?
Because the rail, because the line coming into Volusia crosses, it's like an east-west connector and comes around and then into Volusia, where it comes under Interstate 4, and so there's potential on the alternative analysis to realign that current alignment into I-4 or not. I mean, that I think what, Frank, you're asking for is to keep that open so that we can make those decisions as the alternative analysis proceeds.
So there is potential connectivity.
Into Seminole County.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to clarify that.
Oh, okay.
So there's really two questions here, Frank.
Yeah.
Rail or yes or no?
Preserve the envelope.
And
Preserve the envelope.
How far to go.
That's correct. How far to go with the two managed lanes?
Okay. And FDOT is recommending two managed lanes to Rhode Island.
Right. And
if I understood that.
The rail envelope
and
as well.
Preserving the rail envelope. And is there a motion to direct staff to bring back a resolution for next month?
So moved.
Moved by Patterson, seconded by Mrs. Cusack. Any additional conversation, questions, comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Is that good for you, Frank?
Thank
Is that work?
We appreciate it. And
okay.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Okay. Thank you. You too.
Madam Chair, Frank, before you go, if I could, and thank you very much for the presentation. You know, really a lot of exciting work going on. With regards to the interchange project and the pedestrian improvement project, can you explain to the group where one ends and one begins, and whether there is a gap between those two in terms of transition?
The interchange project on I-95 currently goes, I believe, along US 92. Basically, it's an improvement on, I don't have that information here in front of me. I believe there is. The limits of the interchange and the limits of that pedestrian project aren't the same. They're not the same type of project. So this is an interstate widening project, and so.
But my point, I guess, is that we have a major pedestrian improvement project that has a limit, and then we have kind of a major road capacity project that also has a limit, and the transition between those two really probably needs to be looked at carefully so that we don't have a gap in there between road activity and pedestrian activity, that we have a smooth transition. We have a lot of bus ridership and boarding activity out in this area and all along 92. And again, making sure that we transition from heavy pedestrian intensity to heavy vehicular intensity, making sure that transition is smooth and clear, that we address that gap in between.
Happy to work with you on getting
that
done.
That would be great, because I'm sitting here thinking during the Daytona 500, there's people who walk miles under I-4 to park just for parking purposes, not I-4, I-95. So you're looking for the pedestrian piece to extend through the roadway project.
Well, I'm not sure whether it even needs to extend, but the transition area as that project tails off, again, it's also landscaping and aesthetics and a lot of, as the gateway, making sure we don't have this piece that's missed,
okay.
You know, that's a short piece.
We're actually looking at that, and the sidewalk connectivity, and you're taking the limit not only to 95, but actually to I-4 past MPGA to come high.
Being reminded, we have a lot going on in Volusia County.
We do, and we are happy about that.
Reminded me that we actually have, we have two different studies we're working on, ISB master plan, but they also have a specific project looking at sidewalk connectivity for all the, it's broken down into three phases, one out here, one closer to downtown, and then actually one towards the beach side as well, looking at the way people access this. So we'll definitely work with the TPO on getting these addressed.
Great. Mrs. Gyabi, would you like to be on the record, please?
For the record, Miriam Gyabi, Gyabi & Associates, working with FDOT on these exciting projects. What Lois mentioned is really interesting, and I think we should look at it. What she's asking in more detail, to look at how this, okay, people are walking around, where it's going to end, and how it's going to connect with the rest of the project. And I think it's a great point, and we need to take a look at that. However, for the pedestrian, we are looking at pedestrian, the sidewalks connectivity throughout ISB, all the way, we are actually extending the limits from I-95 all the way to LPGA and I-4. And also, we are looking at the master planning, the whole ISB, which Martha Moore from our firm is working on. So it's a lot of projects are going on, but I think we should look at what Lois is just mentioned, and we can be happy to report back on that.
Great.
Thank you, ma'am.
That's wonderful. You got all that, Frank? Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, both Frank and Miriam. Okay, I don't see any other questions or comments, so we'll move to presentation on the State Road A1A Pedestrian Safety Audit Report. And Mr. Harris, you're going to do that, correct?
Well, Mr. Tony Nasi, DOT District 5 Safety Engineer, is here to tell us more about this project.
Oh, great. Okay.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm Ryan Cunningham with Kittleson Associates, a FDOT consultant. And Tony asked me to make this presentation to you all on the State Road. Sure. So I'll be presenting on the State Road A1A pedestrian road safety audit that was conducted over the summer. We'll be talking about the study limits, the crash history that we have out there, the safety audit itself, and then our field observations and recommendations. The study limits were about a third of a mile corridor beginning at Earl Street and going up to Oak Ridge Boulevard. That included three signals, the signal at Earl Street, the signal at Oak Ridge, and then in between at Warris Street. If you're familiar with the area, it looks like my aerial didn't show up. That's where the Ocean Walk shops are, the Hilton and the Wyndham. So very high pedestrian area, a lot of tourist activity going on there. Over a six-year period, we had 17 pedestrian or bicycle-related crashes, and 88% of those involved injury. Someone or multiple people were injured. Which is typical of pedestrian and bicycle crashes, usually high percentage of injuries. Thankfully, there were no fatalities over that time period. Something to note was that more than a third involved drugs or alcohol involvement. So you had a lot of that going on. And something else interesting, bottom left-hand corner of the slide shows crashes by day of week, and you can see that Saturday and Sunday, that pedestrian activity spikes, and that's when we have the majority of our crashes going on. Also, throughout the day, crashes by hour, we were interested to see that the majority of these crashes happened between noon and 6 p.m. So kind of, you know, afternoon, mid-afternoon to late afternoon. As part of our project, we put together a crash diagram. So this summarizing where each of these crashes occurred over 6 years. pinpointing those locations and then showing the movements of the vehicles as well as the pedestrians or the bikes. This is included in our report to look at a more detailed scale. We see that there was a cluster of crashes at the Ora Street intersection. So you can see that in the top half. And then in the bottom half, there's a cluster of crashes at the Oak Ridge Boulevard intersection. So that's a little background on the crashes. The road safety audit that was conducted, our team was made up of representatives from multiple government jurisdictions and agencies, including District 5, Volusia County, City of Daytona Beach, the TPO, and then myself and Jack Freeman from Kittleson Associates as FDOT consultants. We conducted the road safety audit on July 31st, which was a Thursday, and we met early in the afternoon with our team to go over the crash data and the contributing factors that we were seeing as part of that. Then we went out into the field in the late afternoon, which is when the majority of these crashes were happening, to observe the physical environment as well as the pedestrian activity that's going on out there. We broke for dinner and then reconvened in the evening since about a third of the crashes were happening under dark conditions. A lot of times you go back out in the field in the dark and you see something completely different. So we went back out in the dark, rewalked the corridor together, and made observations at night. The following morning, we got back together to debrief, talk about our observations, and then come up with potential countermeasures to solve the issues that we were seeing. And I'll just quickly hit a couple of the key issues that we were seeing on this corridor. Here I have listed corridor-wide issues, and I'll just hit on two of these. Number one, the crosswalk visibility within the aesthetic treatments at the intersections. Really beautiful aesthetic treatments in those intersections, but the crosswalks themselves are not very well distinguished within the context of the intersection. So, and you can see the picture in the bottom left, somebody walking across the intersection within the crosswalk may be hard to tell that they're actually in a crosswalk when you're sitting in your vehicle. And so we came up with some ideas for making those a little bit more distinguishable without removing the aesthetic treatment. And then also we saw a lot of pedestrians crossing mid-block. As you can imagine, if you've been out there, you've probably seen it yourself. A lot of land use on each side of the road, people wanting to cross from one side to the other, whether it's they parked on one side of the road and are going towards the beach side, or they're going to the shops on the west side of the road. So people crossing, you know, not just at intersections, but in between intersections. And we saw about a quarter of our crashes occurred where people were crossing mid-block. I'd like to also focus on key issues at the Ora Street intersection, and then I'll also talk about Oak Ridge. At Ora Street, there's no marked crosswalk on the south side of that intersection. And that's the same side of the street where you have the pedestrian overpass. We saw a lot of people crossing, as you can see in the pictures here, crossing where there might be a crosswalk there, but not with the protection of crosswalk or a pedestrian signal. And then also a lot of people crossing, you know, underneath the bridge just south of the intersection. Up the street a little ways at Oak Ridge, this was the northern extent of our study limit, there's no marked crosswalk on the north side of that intersection. And we did see quite a few people crossing there. We also noticed some side distance restrictions for the eastbound. If you're on the eastbound approach as a vehicle, looking left or looking right, there are some site restrictions. Now, our understanding is that the north side of the intersection is being redeveloped, and so there was some talk of having discussions with the developer to, they're redesigning that, the signal in the intersection from my understanding, and we're going to try and get them to bring in a crosswalk on the north side and to clean up the corners to kind of preserve a little more site distance there. In our study, we go through each location, and so I've gone through very quickly on our observations, but for each observation that we made at each location, we made a recommendation for improvements. And then we prioritize those into short-term maintenance-level projects, near-term projects that can be brought into other ongoing studies or programmed improvements such as a milling and resurfacing project, and then long-term improvements that would likely require further study and may need to be their own project in the work program later on. So this, and we have I have an example of the table that we included at the end of our report at the bottom of this page, including the location, the issue, and the suggestion for each issue that we noted. And those are, again, prioritized into short-term, near-term, and long-term projects. The next steps, going beyond this study, the short-term maintenance projects that we identified are being coordinated with FDOT maintenance and with local public work groups, and those can be handled at the maintenance level, we believe. And then FDOT is also picking up two locations for potential projects, including marking the crosswalk on Ora Street's south side. So that's where the pedestrian overpass is. We saw a lot of people crossing there and saw some crashes there as well. And then also looking at a mid-block crosswalk north of Butler Boulevard. Butler Boulevard is in between Ora Street and Oak Ridge. So that's about a quarter-mile section without a crossing. So they're looking at providing an additional opportunity to cross in between those two signals. I went through that quickly, but appreciate you having me here. Okay. If you do have any questions, I'd be happy to address.
Elizabeth?
Yes. Referring back to your data on the crashes, I think it's page 2 in here, I was just curious if you have any demographics related to age or gender of the people who are involved. I'm curious if they are adult tourists visiting our area or if potentially they're older children after school, not thinking appropriately.
We did, in our report, include a histogram like this showing the age of those involved. We don't know whether or not they were tourists, but we do have information on that in our report. I can grab that for you real quick. I don't remember the exact details.
I can get with you afterwards.
Okay.
Thank you.
Other, Rob?
Who received the full report?
The report was sent to each of the stakeholders. So we have DOT, Volusia County Traffic Engineering, City of Daytona Beach, and the TPO all received the report.
Did those that get distributed to the board?
The report itself hasn't been distributed yet.
Okay.
Has it been finalized at this point?
It has been.
Okay. I think just granted it's kind of a Daytona Beach thing, but we're working on that A1A safety.
The whole corridor study,
The corridor study, which I think may be kind of interest to frame what we might be seeing in the future. That Oak Ridge project actually spans Oak Ridge.
Right.
It will be on both sides connected above where the county has graciously allowed a change to that beach access.
Mm.
With a parking garage actually on the west side of A1A. So there certainly are some significant crosswalk considerations there because people will be parking, probably valet, but there will be some, I believe, guest parking on that side, South Park.
Mm-hmm.
So that entire intersection is going to get rebuilt with this particular hotel project.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Well, now we'll move to presentation on the 2040 Long Range Transportation Plan, the financial piece of this. And Martha, are you handling this? Martha Moore from Guyabi and Associates is going to provide us the report. Welcome.
Thank you all very much. Again, Martha Moore from Guyabi and Associates. I think y'all are used to seeing me here about every month and at all the other committees. And I'm your final presentation today, so I'm probably all that stands between you and some pumpkin pie. So I'm going to go through this, and not too quickly, but if you have questions, sure, feel free to interrupt me. This is just a quick overview of what we're doing with the 2040 long-range plan. Sometimes it seems like we barely finish the 2035 plan, and then, oh my goodness, it's time that we have to update it again, because we do this every 5 years. And we have to identify the improvements that we need, but we have to contrast back to how much money we think we're going to have over the next 25 years, and then somehow get that balance to work out so that we have a cost-feasible plan. The DOT looks at state and federal guidance, MAP 21 and some other legislation, and they provide to us the 2040 Revenue Forecast Handbook that develops the state and federal forecast for 2040, and that's what we base the majority of our forecast on. And in the forecasting process, as I said just a minute ago, we have all of our planned improvements, and those have capacity elements and non-capacity, which would be the right-of-way and the operations and maintenance planning, that sort of thing, against our revenue estimates. And here we're looking at state and federal revenue, which is about 85% of our revenue, as well as the local county forecast. And what do we mean by capacity programs? You'll actually see Ms. Northey is featured in our picture down in the lower right.
Oh, thank you.
Capacity programs would be highway construction, right-of-way, arterial construction, transit. And then we also look at non-capacity elements, safety projects. They were just talking about projects with that pedestrian road safety audit. Resurfacing, we have to think about preserving the assets we already have through operations and maintenance, and then putting those projects together. Sources of revenue, federal DOT, state DOT, local, Volusia County, Flagler County, and also impact fees with that we're looking at with the city of Palm Coast. So our federal revenue sources, they're primarily fuel tax based. If you think about, we pay taxes at the gasoline pump every day practically, and it goes toward not just gasoline, but diesel, compressed natural gas, other fuels like the ethanol-free fuels. Also, there are taxes associated with tires and with vehicle purchases. And then all of these funds get sent up to the Federal Highway Trust Fund in D.C., and they get sort of mixed around in a very complex formula, and they come back to the state, except Florida is a donor state, so all the money that we send doesn't come back to us to use in our road plan. State sources are similar. We have highway and fuel-related taxes. The vehicle-related, that could be your tag registration, your vehicle registration, your license fees, tourism-related taxes, taxes on rental cars, as well as any growth management funding and also turnpike revenues. It's interesting to go back and look. Understand this is a statewide revenue forecast that compares the 2035 revenues with what we're forecasting for 2040. And 2035 is considerably higher. I believe it's about a $10 billion difference that was forecast between 2035 and 2040. So overall through the state, the estimates are down for revenue. And this is what we're anticipating for our 2040 LRTP. If we look at just the capacity programs, that's $1.9 billion over. You'll note actually it's a 22-year period, and that's because we already have the 3 years of the TIP are already funded. So we look at from 2019 to 2040. And then I'm going to pull out the VOTRAN revenues here. VOTRAN is looking at just basically a status quo effort. There's no money in here forecast for expansion of services. And there's also not a match. We've got the SunRail feeder routes are in there, $78 million. Local revenue sources, there's a local option gas tax and also impact fees. Now, it's not quite an apples to apples to compare the 2035 revenue forecast with the 2040 revenue forecast, because under 2035, we looked at a surtax that would bring in about $30 million a year. And also, we have a different MPA. So we've brought in more of Flagler County and the city of Palm Coast. So those revenues this time are going to be different. But what we've projected so far, these are for local projects that we can put into the LRTP for Volusia County, Flagler County, City of Palm Coast. Those are the major areas. Would be about $353 million. And overall, we're looking at $2.364 million, $2.3 billion. $2 billion of that would be state and federal, about 85%, $353 million, or 15% for local revenues. Now, how can we increase that? Well, I mentioned just a minute ago that last time we looked at Volusia County having a surtax. We're not considering that this time, as there's been no motion to go forward with that. That would be an option. Flagler County has a half-cent sales tax option right now. It's being used on a prison, but potentially could be used for some transportation improvements. At some point, the MPA may choose to go to a mobility fee as opposed to transportation impact fees. There's also, and probably on a larger basis, a miles driven fee, which is keyed more to mileage as opposed to fuel consumption, may well be considered. And then a rental car surtax is certainly possible in this area, but it wouldn't really bring in much money. And that is the quick overview, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
questions? Joe?
Yeah,
yes, sir.
I have a question regarding your projected Voltran operating budget.
Right, yes, sir.
Like a 200% increase between 2019 to 2020 and 2021 to 2025. Is that because of the additional years, or is it for 1 year from 2019 to 2020?
Yes, sir.
Or is that an annual?
No, it's a function of the groupings of years.
Yeah, the 2 year grouping, then yes, go on up.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I just, I'm curious on projected local revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the impact fee issue, but why would you pull out Flagler County and City of Palm Coast for a fuel tax separately? Is that, and not, we have Volusia County, Flagler County, and then City of Palm Coast. What's the reason for that? Is that?
Yeah, I think that the structure is a little different, and we can get into more detail about that. You know, certainly when we did that that workshop the one day, it was a recognition that we still have a lot of learning to do about the Flagler-Palm Coast area. The ownership and maintenance of roads is much different than it is here.
Okay.
And
all
so
right. Well,
the City of Palm Coast owns and maintains more roads that in this area would typically be maintained and operated by Volusia County. So there's a different sort of dynamic up in that.
All right. Okay. That's good for me. Other? Okay. Thank you. Happy Turkey Day, Martha.
Happy Turkey Day to everybody, and have safe travels, and I hope you stay dry.
Yeah, well, we hope so, too. Okay, Mr. Ferguson, our new TPO liaison, you will answer any questions. Do you have a report to give us or anything you'd like to say?
Well,
we
I
welcome
just wanted
you
to say that that there are no new projects underway, and though we're getting close to a couple of them being wrapped up, they're not yet complete, so I really don't have anything to report.
Okay, any questions for our new liaison for FDOT? Thank you. Welcome again. Now we'll move to the Executive Director's Report, page 147. Lois?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll try to make these comments brief. Legislative delegation meeting, I think most of you are aware, is scheduled for next Wednesday on December 3rd, and I have made a request to go ahead and speak to talk about the TPO's legislative priorities for the upcoming session. Just a follow-up on the closing of VCOG and the office space that we have available. We have been in talks with an organization, a potential subleasing tenant. That decision hasn't been made as they go through their budgeting process. I am hopeful we will continue either way to investigate our options for finding a new location that is more appropriately sized to the organization that still maintains a very good and convenient location. We have set a date for the annual board retreat, and there's a save the date that's been emailed that is included in your package, and that is Friday, February 6th. We always hold those in the morning, and then we offer a lunch where we typically do a wrap-up or an exercise. And for those of you that want to cut out early, you're welcome to do that. But that is Friday, February 6th, and we hope to see you all there. I just want to take a moment to also express my best wishes to Councilmember Emter as well as Councilmember Northey. One of the things I think that was missed is even though Pat joined the TPO again in 2007, she actually has a total of 18 years serving on the TPO on and off during her service. And that is a wealth of knowledge and experience. And I'm sorry that we are not going to have that. Hopefully we'll have that accessible to us in some other form. I want to thank both of you as well for the support that you've given me since I took over in this role. The only other thing I want to add is that we do not meet in December, so I hope everybody has a very safe and happy holiday season. We'll see you in the new year.
Okay, thank you, Lois. And we'll start with River to Sea TPO board members. And Lita, we'll start down there with you.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank Gene and Pat both for your service, Pat. I know you in 1992 was when I first got involved in TPO.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, long time. And I wish you the very best.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to wish everyone a happy, blessed Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Joe?
I just want to second that. Wish both of you the best and everyone happy and safe holidays.
And Joe, I promise you that the poet issue for the from the county council, they promised me it would be in December, the process. So stay on all of them when I'm gone on that issue, okay?
Again, echoing the thank you to both of you, and just Merry Christmas and safe travels.
Happy New Year. Coming around, anything?
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving, and just to point out that in 92, James was in the 8th grade, now he's in 9th.
You had to do that, didn't you? One last time.
He's got me beat by ear. This
is like a personal joke on county council. The youngster over here always rubs our nose in it for the old ones. Lee?
Yeah, well, don't feel bad with our new commissioners. Bob Apgar and I are Gramps and Meemaw there for them, so it's kind of interesting. Yeah. Again, Pat and Jean, it's been a pleasure. Pat, I know I'll be seeing you, and thank you. I spoke to Clay Henderson. He said that you're staying on the St. John's River Water Alliance, and I know you'll be active in making sure that is still done. Just a couple things from the City of DeLand. Our Christmas parade is Saturday a week on the 6th. We are going back to the nighttime parade, so all welcome to the parade. And on Friday prior to that is our tree lighting and Santa. So everybody come down to DeLand and enjoy DeLand.
You all had a very nice art festival, although it was a bit wet, but
it was wet, but it was well attended. Stetson nice. Football is done for the season, so we're winding up to our holiday season. So a lot going on in DeLand.
Great, Ms. Cusack.
Thank you. Just want to say to all of you, I wish you the very best as we enter into our season of Thanksgiving, and also say to you that I look forward to our continuing partnership as we move forward into the new year. So to all of you, have a safe and wonderful holiday season. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I echo the comments that have been made.
Come this way. All right.
I want to echo that, but I also want to, you know, congratulate, you know, Joyce and Bob and the folks that the one re-election that will continue to serve on the TPO. It's a great loss to lose the folks that have had the experience and have been here through thick and thin, usually thin and thin because we never have any money. The future still looks bright, and I look forward to working with the new board as we convene next year.
And Elizabeth, you're the new representative for Holly Hill.
Well, no, actually, I'm just the substitute today.
Oh, okay.
So
just today.
I wanted
okay.
to thank you for allowing me to okay. participate. Okay. Quite informative. Very impressed with the goings on here. So I want to thank you for that, and then just wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
Thank you all. I've appreciated the help, and particularly from Lois, who has guided the new people along very well. In 3 years, I probably learned half of the acronyms. But those of you that are carrying on, I'm sure will be able to learn the other half too. Thank you all, and have a great Thanksgiving.
I want to echo what everybody said so far about the service we've had from our two party members. And I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and Thanksgiving.
And you're going to probably get that overpass on the what we took, the action we took today. You'll get your overpass on Rhode Island. About time, isn't it?
Well, when I went to the meeting in Maitland down there, they indicated 2025, not 2020. So I was listening
Lordy.
To that very closely.
Lordy, Lordy.
When I said that.
Okay.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and my thanks to both of you for your valued service.
Thank you, Jason.
Happy Thanksgiving and safe holidays.
Okay, and anybody from our advisory boards want to say anything? Gillis.
Blaze, chairman of the CAC. Pat, happy motoring in your Jeep from one Jeep owner to the other. Off-road or
right.
on the road.
That's right.
Bicycle.
They're fun. They are fun.
Anyway, thank you all for CAC member being a representative here. I would just want to say that Holly Hill has a Christmas parade the first Saturday of the month. It took it over from Daytona back in 1959. So what happens in one city can be picked up in another city in order to improve conditions in this particular county. Have a happy holiday. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody. Particularly thank you to the staff who has been really good to work with. And I know that this board is energized and the staff is organized, and so we're going to be doing great things in the future, and I look forward to watching them. Thank you. Bye. We're adjourned.